Welcome to another episode of FMI's Built-In Podcast, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Scott Winstead, FMI Consulting President. I'm really excited to share my conversation with Ed Kutsky with you today. Ed is an Executive Vice President with Aldridge Electric, an industry leader in electrical and foundation construction solutions for the transportation, mission-critical, and power sectors, whose portfolio includes deep capabilities in the transportation, renewable energy, mission-critical, substation, transmission distribution, foundation solutions, industrial infrastructure, government and defense, and communications and technology sectors. Last year, the firm surpassed $900 million in revenue for the first time. And in his role as EVP, Ed is responsible for corporate business development and strategic accounts and markets at Aldridge. Said another way, he is ultimately responsible for the growth and diversification of existing and emerging business segments. He brings a wealth of experience from several leadership positions over his 38 years in the electrical contracting business. Our conversation will touch on a range of topics, but we're going to focus primarily around the topics of growth strategy and business development. Welcome to the show, Ed. It's great to see you, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Glad to be with you.
Well, I thought it might be appropriate to do a bit of a look back to look forward to get us started just for some context. And so I would love it if you would go back in time maybe 5-10 years ago, and how would you have described the Aldridge Electric of back then versus how you would describe it today?
Yeah, sure. So about 10 years ago, we were in the process of a generation transfer, let's say, third generation. Ken Aldridge was a CEO and had been leading the company since the late 70s, 1980 exactly. And he had a very specific transition to the next generation that went over 10 years. We were mostly a regional transportation and power contractor, mostly based in the Midwest. And we had some national operations. We pursued some transit projects across the country mostly with Mass and Kiewit relationship. And then we started expanding more, I'd say probably 7-8 years ago, more into the regional transportation opportunities on the East and West Coast, and then since put some offices there. I'd say like 10 years ago, we were about $250 million in revenue, 500 people. I put some context around it. Currently, we're at just under 2,000 people with over $900 million in revenue. So substantial growth over the last 7-8 years. We had a pretty good sized growth strategy going on the transportation side as well as the power side. So there was a significant amount of growth over the last 10 years. And I think the industry offered that opportunity. The electrical industry has been pretty strong over that time period.
I appreciate the context and kind of framing the anchor points kind of then versus now, because that's kind of where I'd love to take this conversation if you're up for it. Just quite a tremendous success story. Those kinds of success stories don't just happen. There's a lot of intentionality, a lot of foresight, a lot of planning, a lot of expertise, and ultimately a lot of really good, effective execution, all of which says easy, does hard. As you and I were talking kind of leading up to this, I'm parroting one of my colleagues who made the comment, you know, Aldridge is a lot more than your typical electrical contractor, which is how we think of you all. And I would love it if you would just take a second and talk about what's been the through line or what's been your view of the secret sauce that's kind of taken you from even back to the 80s to this inflection point that you've grown through in the last 10 years?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's really kind of fun to reflect on it. My 35 plus years at Aldridge, I think the key to success has always been the people. I think, you know, Ken Aldridge has always invested in passionate people. And I'll talk about our culture a lot. It's a family business. They have a lot of care and concern for their people and developing leadership to build the company and continue to grow has always been the forefront, call it the secret sauce. I'd say, you know, from a tactical standpoint, we're a self-performer. We really, you know, when I started in 1990, I couldn't believe how it was early in my career, how the craft at Aldridge was celebrated and just really the amount of respect that, you know, Ken Aldridge as an owner and all the leadership, Warren, his brother, and they all had for the field was remarkable. You know, we're a self-performing electrical contractor. I mean, over the years, we've primarily been, an installer. And I think it was that start, those roots that led to innovation, that led to different methodologies. And, you know, when you're an installer, you have to compete and you have to continue to compete and evolve in the market. And I think that's built the culture of self-performing innovators, differentiating, we'll talk about, but like, That's part of the secret sauce, right? Is building the company around passionate leaders that want to build and that want to continue to evolve, right? And so it's not enough to kind of stay still. It's kind of looking for the next innovative way to install plowed cable, plowed duct systems along a railroad right away, or put in airport lighting on a runway, you know, under a 8-hour closure overnight. And, you know, some of those things where it really forces you to be creative and to change your methodology to stay ahead, to be competitive and to continue to grow, which kind of, again, it's a cycle, right? Feeding the growth and attracting new leaders and then continuing to grow. And you got to evolve at the same time so you maintain opportunities. So that's a little bit of the secret sauce.
You mentioned in this, it's an observation we've certainly had of you all, is that this emphasis on the field and on the craft. I think even our founder back 70 some odd years ago made the comment, you know, the best performing firms glorify the field. If you really think about it, everybody on the org chart essentially exists to support the effective putting of work in place in the field. If you kind of think about how can firms really take that to heart and make sure that crews are set up for success. You know, materials are staged appropriately so they're not having to be moved 6 times on the job site. But there's a big emphasis on making sure the field is kind of the center. And for the financial types out there, if you look at a P&L of any type of a contractor, you know, 80 to 95% of every dollar runs through the field in some way, shape, or form in terms of the decisions made. And so that emphasis, I would certainly agree with in terms of what we've observed with you all.
Yeah, I think, you know, from the roots, right, it comes to the actual building when you're small. And then as you grow, the field still is imperative in terms of the way things get built. No matter if you're self-performing or if you're general contracting and running, the field still has to coordinate and operate. And they're also the keepers of the innovation methodology, means and methods, right, which differentiates you from your competition. So we have a subject matter expert program that we have an ambassador program. So we kind of celebrate our leaders that have that builder mentality.
Well, you mentioned something else, Ed, that I want to come back to a little bit, but just to mention it so I don't forget it later. But the type of work you all do, you know, is not your garden variety, run-of-the-mill electrical work. I mean, it's pretty complex. It's pretty hairy. I think that attracts a certain type of person that wants to tackle those kinds of opportunities. And so this concept of like-minded people tend to seek each other out. You know, I know you spend a lot of your time both in helping develop and codify the firm's growth strategy and also from a outbound external, you know, business development type of a role. So maybe talk a bit about how you approach growth strategy and what goes through your mind when you're thinking about this, where the firm needs to place its bets.
Yeah, it's a collaborative effort, you know, with the leadership team. You know, we're a pretty diverse company, as you mentioned, in terms of our transportation and power offerings. The other part of our business is we've always been strategic planners, and Ken Aldridge always emphasized strategic growth. And I think one of the things we did with strategic growth is we continued to evolve, and realizing that we couldn't stay the same. Couldn't do the same installations. We couldn't do the same projects. We had to continue to evolve, take on more risk, take on more complex projects. And again, that gave us opportunity to grow the company, which gave us opportunity to employ, hire people that kind of fit that mold. So our growth strategy has always been to evolve, right? To do things better, do things differently, you know, understand the needs of our customers and be innovative in the way we approach the work. So as you take on more risk, the field shrinks a little bit in terms of your competition. And if you're able to manage the risk, it's contracting 101, right? Manage the risk and then you can achieve some profitability. But it's a tight business and it always has been, right? High risk, low return business, but continuing to evolve, I think, has probably been our strategy. So we look at in trying to match our core values to the markets that we pursue. So we have what's called a strategic approach at Aldridge, which is made up of the value drivers we bring to the market, the type of markets we serve, the programs we'd like to get involved in, and then our internal support systems that provide us the ability to go execute. And we always try to match up the strategic approach for Aldridge to the markets that we're pursuing. So not only are we looking at a market based on its geography, its longevity, its competitive nature, the general contractor market, all those things that we look at in terms of approaching a market. But then we also have to apply what it is we're good at, what our strategic approach is to make sure that we can fit or provide value in that particular market. And that's the other half of the research that we do on market approach. We're constantly milling ideas around what we call a growth model.
This maybe is a little bit ahead in our discussion, but you know, if you take a minute and just build out more on the strategic approach that you mentioned, because to me, that seems like a differentiator. It's one thing to be it and say it internally, but how do you communicate that value to the market and those firms that are going to ultimately hire Aldridge?
Well, so just a little more around our competitive and what we think is our competitive advantage is project execution, right? And like risk, taking on the risk, understanding it, and giving certainty of performance. I mean, we have a depth of resources, not only in our people, but our equipment and our means and methods. And I think an area that we continue to try to push is upfront value drivers, meaning that we're getting involved in the process early. As we've evolved as a company, I should have mentioned earlier, I mean, primarily what I've noticed is that our appetite to take on bigger and bigger projects, and we're what was a crazy $10 million job is now $500 million in this day and age. And our people just continue to push towards bigger projects. We're not a maintenance contractor. We're not a small jobs. We're not a recurring business type. We're a major project builder. And so our appetite continues to rise in terms of the size of jobs. And that takes a certain type of people that we recruit for and we retain and we train for. And then it takes a certain market. So again, as you evolve into that type of large project market, which on the transportation side and the power side are both, we're both seeing major projects evolution, we continue to try to provide the upfront value, meaning that, you know, it's super important that you're strategically teaming on the jobs, you're getting the attention of not only owners, but the general contracting community, and as well as engineering. So you got three or four components there that you're trying to assemble and make the right bets, but push yourself up a little further up in the value chain. So you're not just an installer. I think that's been a big evolution of ours over the last 5 years to go from not installer, but more of a strategic positioning. And we only approach the projects where our value can be realized or appreciated by any owner. And if we can convince them of that, then we can get on a team and execute to our differentiator and hopefully make a couple of bucks.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you and I talked about this before, but you know, we talk within our strategy practice a lot about the four pillars of what good strategy looks like, you know, and it's focus, choice, systems, and mindset, right? You need to have all four of those. They need to hang together. And so focusing on the markets and the segments where you can provide that unique value, where you're more than just, using your words, a competent installer of electrical systems, and then choosing this is what we're going to do and this is what we're not going to do. And the latter is a lot of times a lot more important than the former. These are the things that we're not going to waste our time on, these shiny objects. Then you've got to have the systems, you know, the strategy, the structure, the compensation model, the meeting cadence, governance, all that's got to hang together in support of whatever that strategy is. And then it's ultimately about mindsets. You know, how do we have the right risk adjusted appetite? How does that inform our go, no go decision checklist? And then once you decide to go after something, it's all hands on deck. You really increase your odds of winning the work. You know, I'm reminded a lot of times it's really easy for firms to conflate strategic planning with strategy. You know, they're not the same, right? There's a lot of firms that go through, you know, an annual strategic planning process, but at the end of the day, it's not a real strategy. I think what you've just framed in terms of your strategic approach, you know, how you think about markets and how you think about going after work, prioritizing the business functions accordingly is a bit of a differentiator from our perspective. So I appreciate you sharing that. You know, I'd love to maybe pick up on that and talk a second about structure, you know, kind of going back to what we just talked about. If ultimately structure should follow strategy in the ideal world, to figure out where you want to place your bets and then make sure you organize the business to pursue those opportunities. So maybe take a second and talk about how you all think about organizational structure.
Yeah, it's a great segue. Our structure has always been around the seller doer model. We have P&L leaders. We have about 8 different P&Ls across the country and across the markets. And that ebbs and flows. I mean, it could be 11. The seller doer model is a complete owner of the P&L, basically is responsible to obtain the work and execute the work with a team and return the profit. And everybody else supports them, much like my function in business development. And it seems to be a model that works in the construction industry and for us, right? Because we are such a self-performer, but we are very diverse. So we have to have passionate leaders in each of those positions. And that's kind of the most critical piece, especially when you're expanding into new markets or different geographies, finding that right passionate leader that will live and breathe that market to succeed, and everyone else supports them. So we've also, I think, done a really good job of in this market of being able to be flexible in terms of our P&L groups. So we've had a lot of ebb and flow between transportation and power, and I think we'll get into some of the hot markets, but you know, taking advantage of a hot market and moving people around has become a strength, I'd say. And you know, we're holding people summits where we're analyzing leadership and moving people into positions a year or two before where they're needed as a result of planning. We're also on the fly, pick up a big job. We're all hands on deck trying to staff a 90-person job, which is, you know, half management today, right? So it's a lot of moving parts, and it takes a lot of discipline organizationally. It takes a lot of leadership synergies. Our current organization structure, I mentioned the organizational transition that happened, and formally have new CEO, CIO, and the Aldridge family, and then COO structures. We have 2 COOs on the operational and 1 on power, 1 on transportation, and 1 as a corporate services COO. So that whole structure had changed from what was formerly Ken Aldridge, Steve Reeve, Tom McClendon, some of our former president, CEO, and that happened over the last 5 years, and it's still the transition that seems to take time. But that having that ability to have a new leadership in place that's able to be more currently configure each other out and has an opportunity to do things a little differently than they have in the past. It's one of the things I've heard is such an interesting thing of generational or leadership changes is the opportunity to change what maybe need fixing, right? And so part of our structure now is about having the adaptability. The power market has been, you know, taking off, and the transportation market has grown, but at a steady state. So while most of our growth has been on the power side, we continue to grow on both sides and need support on major transportation projects as well. But that ability to move people between the P&Ls and take advantage of what's in front of us has been a big part of our success over the last few years.
You know, just to reinforce a couple concepts, Ed, that you talked about, I think the notion of finding and identifying passionate leaders that are really good, and maybe you move them into leadership roles a year or two prior to when on paper they may seem to be, quote, ready. For us, that's a tell. And I think you and I talked about there's sometimes, you know, lines and boxes on an org chart can cloud what's really important. If you kind of do an exercise and say, who are the 10 most talented, effective leaders we have in the organization, regardless of what their title is today, and then compare that to the list of what are the 10 most important roles as you define import, whether it's revenue, P&L, customer service, field ops, whatever, however you define what's important, and how many people on that first list of 10 are filling roles on that second list of roles, is a pretty effective exercise at pointing out gaps. And if there's a lot of gaps, then, you know, that can be a problem. And so you all real time correct for that or account for that by this notion of when we feel like somebody is ready or has the raw material and they're passionate and have a constituency, you know, we're going to go ahead and move them, provide the support necessary, but also we're not going to hold them up by some artificial reason that maybe, you know, they need another 2 years of seasoning.
Yeah, it's a good points there. It goes both ways, really. I mean, you have to make the decisions, right? Informed decisions, put the people in the roles, and then you have to support them. Like our executive team needs to support the leaders we bring in, whether they're leaders that have been around the company for a long time and we just elevate to a position, or whether we bring them in from the outside. We've done a lot more of that over the last 5, 10 years because of the growth in the market. And it's such an important part, being able to take leadership from outside the organization and put them in at a higher level. We spent a lot of time on assimilation, a lot of time on executive touch points for all of our leaders across the company. And then we're also not afraid to make changes if things aren't working out, right? There's a lot of collaboration, and you know, it's to the point where, you know, everyone's got to kind of get along. Everyone's got to kind of see the benefit. And it's really that's part of our culture is being collaborative. So when we have a good collaborative environment, it works well. If we've got problems, you know, if we've got things that don't look right, it sticks out, right? And we need to address those. Otherwise, they're continuing to be a problem. And I think, again, the new executive team is really good at embracing the collaborative nature and trying to address any leadership issues we have, you know, openings or opportunities there to make changes. So it's very important.
You mentioned something earlier, Ed, that I want to touch on before we go too far, which is just, you know, your focus on hot markets and moving resources into those markets. Maybe if you would take a second and talk about how you all are thinking about markets and market selection, and what markets or what segments are you looking at now that you feel really bullish about?
Yeah, so I say this all the time. It's a great time to be in the electrical contracting field. I think I've got about 40 years or going on 40 years in the business, and it's an unbelievable time. I mean, we're seeing both power and transportation markets being very bullish, and the transportation side, again, you know, not as good a growth, right? But you know, certainly been strong funding, and the focus on infrastructure seems to be bipartisan, and it's always been really well supported. And then, you know, obviously technology changes where we're looking at more, you know, connectivity, e-mobility, and everything's going to continue to get automated. And we'll see that with connected autonomous vehicles. Eventually, we'll see that with more of the electric mobility. Unfortunately, now it's been a slow start, I think, because a lot of the manufacturing has not kept up with maybe the demand of the consumer, I'll say, and a lot of the different avenues we look at. But we still are, you know, we're still looking pretty close at e-mobility, the ITS, intelligent transportation, ATMS market, automated traffic management systems has become really important. And I think a lot of our major clients across the country, certainly our major transportation hubs, have been really proactive because, you know, moving traffic around and having smart highways is a great way to utilize resources and maximize the throughput on the road. So we're looking at those markets. The e-mobility market will come back. We've seen a lot of the public transportation busing in the larger markets that are going electric. So we see a lot of that. Our major pursuits, you know, the mega jobs in transportation continue to be very strong as the infrastructure needs continue to be present across the country. We're not seeing the mega projects go away, and that's an arena that we'd like to play in for the reasons we talked about earlier. So we're really focused on the mega projects, and we're constantly pursuing the projects over $50 million per single project just on the electrical install. And on the power side, obviously mission critical, everyone's talking about the data center markets, right? And continues to evolve. We're involved in a lot of data center projects, have been for the last 4 or 5 years. Is an area that we're primarily playing in the electrical site distribution. So again, we're more of a niche player. We've always been more of a site contractor than we have a building contractor. So we've kind of carved out that niche, and we continue to work on it. Again, we have to compete every day in that market, even though it's a very robust market right now. And who knows, right? We know all growth will end. So we don't really know where that's coming. It's such a hot market. I think the industry is trying to figure that out. And we've seen some news in the just yesterday that's kind of significant. DeepSeek, right? So that's on the top of our mind. At the same time, we're doing research projects on how to, you know, figure out the market and continue to thrive in the market. So those are all parts of contracting, right? And I'm again on the power side is just the idea of electric demand. And should electrification take over for more of the petroleum industry? That's to be seen, right? And but certainly the demand side seems to be projected to go up. We haven't seen it actually come to fruition, but it certainly is more talk of it. And then which brings in the grid, the infrastructure grid and reinforcement. So, you know, again, an aging infrastructure on the electrical side needs reinforcement. a lot of the renewable energy initiatives that have been going on. We'll see what happens with them now going forward, but they seem to have been penciling out a lot more renewable energy on the grid, which gives us opportunities for doing interconnects and building out electrical infrastructure to support renewable generation growth. That's been a great niche. And then the grid resiliency is another thing that's a big market that we're looking at. There's a lot of technology around grid resiliency that comes in when you're putting in different kinds of generation across the grid, and then the interconnection of all of that. So it's a robust time in the power grid, power industry, as well as transportation. For those reasons, that's kind of where we're looking.
To your point earlier, two really attractive markets that from a fundamentals perspective look to be pretty resilient, pardon the pun, for a long time to come. So sprinkled throughout the conversation, you've kind of talked a little bit about your approach and philosophy with respect to business development. But just to call it out specifically, if you would maybe take a second and just talk about your approach to business development as an organization.
Yeah, it's interesting, Scott. Just touched about this with our executive team yesterday. I gave an update on, just our business development group. It's a small group, and I've got my views on it. So this will be coming from Ed Kutschke's editorial. But our approach is business development is a support function, just like IT, just like accounting, safety. We support the P&Ls, the people that are building the jobs, taking on the risk, managing the risk, and delivering the profit to the bottom line, right, and growing the company. We support that 100%. So our major functions in business development are three areas that we strategically focus on. Primary focus is project pipeline. Second would be our client interface. And third is the industry interaction, industry presence. And again, we're a small group of about five in a company of 2,000. So between pipeline, client, in industry, those are our guiding lights, just as a way of structuring on our, as I mentioned, the two sides of our business, on our transportation business. Our transportation, I found that the industry in transportation is very regional, meaning that there are national players in the transportation business, but they operate very regionally. So if there's major projects in Southern California, they want to talk to the Southern California folks. So what we have is market segment leaders where we put all our expertise in development, and we stack up the teams to be able to handle regional and major projects as well as everyday projects in the market. So we're doing that in Southern California, Chicago, over the Midwest area, and then the DMV area, Mid-Atlantic. And that serves the transportation industry very well. You have executives, I think, on transportation, major transportation companies that tend to flow across the country, but when it comes down to pursuing projects and executing, it's a regional focus. On the other hand, our power business is very much more national, and the players act more nationally. Of course, you have your owners and utilities and developers are all operating in various regions, but the business does translate a little bit more into being much more national focused when it comes to business development. So we have leaders in our business development assets and the mission critical business, as well as our foundation business and our utility business. So at which they do operate a lot more nationally. And that business is just the way it's been built and the way it operates on a fundamental industry scale. We see those being much more national. So that's kind of our BD approach. Again, it's really a support function that tries to inform from the outside to kind of help our inside operating groups function better and grow.
But yeah, I can certainly appreciate the outside in view, right? It's what happens outside the four walls of the business, and that's where the market is, that's where the action is, and that's where you kind of can sense themes, market themes, and where things are headed. Well, as always, Ed, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time that you have. I would like to ask one final question, if I could. Shifting gears a little bit, as you talk approaching nearly 40 years in the industry, you've had a lot of roles, done a lot, seen a lot, had a lot of success. If you could go back in time and talk to the young Ed Kutschke, what's one piece of advice that you would give yourself?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'd appreciate being prepared a little bit ahead of time because this is a tough one on the spot. But I've been fortunate. 80% of my total career has been with Aldridge. And so I've had a great opportunity to be with a great business and a great family and a business that I love. One thing I could say, I feel very fortunate, but then I can say that if when the younger self might be to, you know, I had the idea of just keep your head down and work and great things will happen. Maybe to kind of like pick your head up every once in a while, look at the big picture. Cause you know, I was certainly a believer in, you know, just do your job really well and you'll get more and then you'll do more and they'll give you more. But you know, I think there's some for young professionals these days, there's a little bit more guidance that they can do self-guiding in their own career. And it really revolves around doing what you love. And I've talked to some of my nieces and nephews these days about, you know, finding something that you love and that you're passionate about. And I think that's, you know, that's a great advice to young people. You have a long time to work and a long career to go into. And I think a lot of people, you know, these days too, are just looking at it from a pure joy standpoint, right? Like, where do I find my pure joy? And I think there's a balance there that, right, that we can craft. And maybe that's a piece of interest, right? That you kind of strike that balance between what it is you like to do and what's available.
And I really appreciate that perspective and reminds me of an executive coaching certification program I went through not that long ago, where one of the big points of emphasis was, where do you take energy from? You know, what gives you energy and what takes energy? And if you can spend most of your life trying to engineer, you know, ways to do things that give you energy, then that's a good life, which is sort of a take on what you essentially just shared.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I've heard that as well as executive coach points. Certainly at this point in our career, we want to do things that give us energy. And but thinking about the earlier self, you know, there's that balance that I think my young self would have appreciated is, you know, you get the hard work and then you have the rewarding part, right? So they both have to coexist. You can't just do whatever you feel like you want to do and succeed, but you also don't have to be, you know, head down, not really guiding yourself. So I think that balance is really important and something that I would think about advising myself on 30 years ago.
That's a great piece of advice for the young Ed, as well as anybody else out there that's getting started. But again, Ed, thanks so much for doing this. And please give our best to the team at Aldridge.
Thanks so much, Scott. Always good being with you. And I appreciate the opportunity today. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Built In. And please remember to like or subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.